So this morning's first speaker is Paul Constant, but Phil's going to, I think, step into his place, and can't find him, as usual. Phil found...
The elusive
Paul Constant, not very constant. You found Richard Rose's teachings in the early 80s, is that correct?
85, yeah.
85, and I believe... I always thought that was kind of an interesting way to discover something that becomes so big in your life, were these little slips in used books or books, is that right, in a bookstore, and just maybe advertising or pointing one to Richard Rose's teaching or his books.
Yeah, the Alvagen Papers.
Yeah, the Alvagen Papers, and that's how Phil got involved with that, and I believe he corresponded with Rose via letter for a few years before.
1 year, yeah.
Okay, so for 1 year... And but maybe kind of felt a little nervous about engaging the community, being part of, you know, the group. And but eventually made it out, and you know, that's 30 years ago now. And I think of Phil as just, I mean, an incredible friend on this journey. I when I think of Phil, I just think of someone who really takes the whole friendship is the highest religion to heart. And Phil has run multiple retreats over the last few years, and has been TAC president on and off for a long time, and he's just very dedicated to this community. So, Phil, in the place of Paul Constant.
Do you remember that, Chris? Was at a meeting one time, and Chris was the MC, and I said that bum Paul Constant didn't show up, so I'm gonna step in his place. He thought I was serious. So I'm gonna read something to start out. I think this is Richard Rose's writing. This is on the back of a TAT journal. So some of the old timers wanna correct me, but I had a hard time finding if this was something he actually wrote. It's called The Real People. It's just a short paragraph here. So who are the real people? They are the ponderers and the action takers. They are the ones who admit their own errors and try to correct them. They are the ones who search for the deepest answers to the mysteries of the world and themselves. They are the ones not interested in the outer glitter, but in the interior substance. They are the ones interested in what is invisible and proclaimed unreal by the majority of men. They are the ones who wish and strive, are open-minded and simple in heart. And those, that last part to me really expresses TAT, open-minded and simple in heart. And when you've been in this for a while, that's a good expression of where the path takes you. It's an opening of the heart, opening of the mind to what is. So I know there's a dozen new people here, and it's not always evident what we're doing up here when we're talking. So we've had a couple of teachers here that express this through what I would call a prism. So it's the light shining through and refracting this light in its different ways, as all of you do as well. So I'm doing this because I love the expression of truth. It's just, I'm just highly attracted. Where was the comment that Bob Harwood made? I'm the 10% club. Those that are really attracted to this, not somebody who's really suffering so much in my life. It was just a very deep interest of mine from my late teens. And what I would like to encourage you as well, I would like to fuel that love of truth and look at this as a deep exploration of body, mind, and essence. So we have Jacob's Ladder back here, which to me expresses that very well. And I'd like to spur you to your own authenticity in how you go about this search. So you don't see that in a lot of schools of teaching, that's they're often prescribing a certain approach. And what I feel TAT is unique in its way of inspiring people to go about this in their own way. So nobody's up here saying this is the way to find truth. And Richard Rose made a commitment to share anything he ever found. So one of his things when he was punching at the cloud, so to speak, as a seeker, he said, if I ever find something, I will share that. And one of my commitments, since I was a guy that was really in my head so much, my commitment is to try to simplify this. So I know some of you are terrified by the drawings that you're seeing out there, and it might seem complex, but I'm going to try to simplify this in a way that I can express it. And as Luke mentioned, what I see this path about is expressing it through friendship and rapport. So a big thing for me, we had a sitting here this morning, it's very nice, very deep, and I like just expressing this in the best way, and to me it's that stillness that sets in when we gather together in this endeavor. So, I guess to encapsulate all that, we're not, I could speak for all those that spoke this weekend, we're not imposing anything, or are we asking for anything? And to me, that is another unique aspect of TAT and its teachers. So there's a lot of long-timers in the room who have been around Richard Rose, or have been direct students of the students of Richard Rose. So what I'd like to ask you is, there's a term, phrase, the subtractive path. So give me some feedback on other ways you would describe that. Some terms. Say again, Doug.
Backing away from untruth.
Yes, backing away from untruth.
Letting go.
Letting go.
Not this, not that.
Not this, what?
Not
that?
This, not that.
Okay.
The ascetic tendency.
The ascetic tendency, what do you mean by that?
Just giving up external or internal things.
Okay. First?
Not lying to yourself.
Okay.
Reverse vector.
Yes.
What do you say?
Reverse vector. Could you repeat what Bob said?
The view, reverse vector, and I heard somebody else say,
view is not the viewer.
View is not the viewer. There's some more.
Breaking your tools.
I like that, yeah, breaking your tools. Okay, so these were mine. I think we got some of these. So a subtractive path, meaning you're not adding qualities to yourself as you go down this road. So we had, what all did we say here? Backing away from untruth. This was something to me that really expresses this, the falling away of self. This is a Richard Rose quote, erosion of ignorance. And to me, this is probably the hardest, unknowing. We always want to grasp this and wrap our mind around this approach. So the unknowing, to me, expresses it well. And there's one thing about this that has always pulled me into this. It's Rose said somewhere in Psychology Observer, I believe it was, there is a storehouse of information about the mind that is unplumbed. So you can go down this path, you can use this in a way to just keep you going. You know, there's always mystery to be uncovered in this path. So what I want to do today is more of what I would call a direct taste, and we're going to do some exercises and some workshops with this. But What I would see in this is shifting your baseline of identity into what is. So this concept of backing away from self is more of a shifting away from what you consider real into something a bit more real. And like I said, we're going to do some exercises to take you there. And it could be as a matter of something very subtle as shifting your attention. So we've heard a lot of speakers talk about that today. Where is your attention in life? What's captivating your attention? Is it your job, or is there things that are very much pulling on you outward? And then there's this other side. What's pulling on you inward? What is it that's distracting you from what's here right now? So is it what I would call a noise of the mind? So there's emotions, conditioning, the self-referential thinking, this blah, 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 that as soon as you wake up in the morning, something kicks in, and there's just this talking that's continuously going on. And that's what I would call noise. And judging yourself, labeling, these are all things that draw your attention away from what's happening now. So what is getting your attention? Or what wants your attention and isn't getting it? So those are two ways of looking at this. And this, to me, is not... This expresses a way of not polishing the small S self, polishing the turd, so to speak, as Bart would say. So this is about... nor is this about obliterating the self. You know, there's a lot of people... go down this road and think, eventually I'm going to wipe out all this stuff about myself and then I'll be much more pure. And in a way that is true, but this is not about obliterating the self. If you set out to do that, you're going to meet a lot of resistance because the self is not something that wants to give up very easily. So it's about what I would say, recognizing the self in something a bit more vast. And that's what I mean by absorbing conflict. So we're not running away from it. We're not pushing it away. We're tuning into something that's a bit more real. So one of my fascinations that a lot of you know lately has been meditation. And I see... what I would call traps that people get themselves into in this process. They want to get into this meditative state to push away aspects about themselves that they don't like. And in a way, the trap is they're almost dividing themselves by, it's a very tricky, the slippery devil of the ego. These one part of the self wants to suppress or get an advantage over another part. And that's what a lot of meditators do. They get really wrapped up in the meditation process itself. So what I would hope to do here today is just lead you a bit into a bit more relaxed approach to that. And Richard Rose said that one of the really remarkable aspects of his character was his capacity to absorb failure. So a lot of us that studied under Rose knew that he tried everything. And he failed at a lot. He failed a lot as a seeker and in a way as a teacher, because probably a lot of us were lazy as students, but he would just try different things. And his life was one of experimentation. So I would say the more you tap into this more real aspect of yourself, again, this is not escaping from conflict. This is expanding into something that's more real and could absorb these failures, absorb these qualities in yourself that you may not like so much. All right, so there's another side of this. This search for a lot of people tends to be very morose And I say absorb satisfaction. This can be, it's been an amazing experience for me, being with different teachers, being with all the different people in a room. And so there's a great satisfaction, as I said, discovering all the mysteries about this path. All right, so I gave you a handout, and these were some of my favorite paradoxes, my favorite conundrums along the path that in one way or another trip me up. So let me give you a couple of definitions of what paradox might mean, according to the dictionary. So one is a statement or proposition that seems contradictory or absurd, but in reality expresses a possible truth. Another definition is a self-contradictory or false proposition. And the third is what I would consider a bit more close to where we want to be with this, is any person, thing, or situation exhibiting an apparently contradictory nature. So these, as I mentioned, as Luke mentioned, I've been at this for 30 years, looking at and being captivated by either side of these various paradoxes. And you'll hear the various teachers refer to either side of these, and they can trip you up if you get locked into them. So as an example, what the mind wants to do is gravitate to either side of these paradoxes. And I chose the first one, which is describes the human condition, essentially, this choice between pain and pleasure. And I circled here, this is the line of life. And any of these paradoxes, I feel, can be the line of life, depending on where you are in your search. So what I chose here was just as an example, a belief that you get locked into this line of positive and negative. This is how the mind works. It's very fluid if you really look at it. It's going back and forth into these various paradoxes. And what you'll see if you look and observe yourself a bit, you can start to get a bit of a detachment from this line of life. And one of the things that could trip you up in this path, this can be a huge leap in a way where you're actually getting a bit of distance instead of being immersed in this positive and negative that the mind is. You start to watch your mind. And this is why this whole process is so individualized and never prescribed in my mind from any teacher, because we're all wired so differently. So we're caught in this mind. And by this I mean you could literally go to bed. You could go to bed with a belief. I find this in myself, a mood or whatever, I'm irritated, and I know I'm tired. When I wake up in the morning, the belief has shifted to something else. So it's like it's evaporated. And this is how the mind works. It's very fluid. If you look at the substance of your smallest self, there's really nothing there because it's constantly changing. It's constantly adapting to the situation. So a big step, which I would call the witness or the viewer or the observer, is to get a bit of detachment from this process. And this is, again, not escaping. This is the trap that I feel a lot of seekers get caught in. This, to me, can appear very cold. You can move away from yourself. And somebody like me who has been very much in their head can say, I want freedom from this self, from this guy who can't seem to get an angle on anything with certainty. So let me just step back and say, that's the guy I feel there in my view, and I can retract into this very comfortable position. And this to me is a trap of the non-dual world, where somebody can escape into this process coldly and feel like
I'm free of that guy, Phil, because now I have stepped back and I have a bit of detachment. And what you really see, and we'll take this a bit further, this is oozing with ego, in my opinion, because it's hiding out in this observation process. That's where things become more and more slippery as you go back into yourself, the subtractive path. So just to illustrate this maybe a different way, if this were, trying to come at this in a different approach, if this were a spotlight shining down into what's in your view, that might be one way of looking at it. Another way, another way might be the pendulum. If this were the focal point of a pendulum swinging back and forth from this viewpoint of observation. So the swinging back and forth is what's in the view. Okay, so to me, Jacob's ladder is the stepping back into this process more and more. So this might be the point that I'm trying to illustrate over here, where you're stepping back into the mind itself. And if I were to say Tat had a community building, and we had a community, I'd actually like to see people specialize in these different areas. So you might have folks involved in body, like Lisa teaches yoga, and other people who are very focused in the body. We have people like Larry, who are psychologists, and we have very astute folks who are teachers here. And I feel part of the process in my search has been coming up the ladder and having a very strong taste of this perspective up here. The other point of this is to come back down into the body, and that's been a path of mine through Linda Clare. So I think it's not hiding out in the absolute itself, but coming back down into the body that's important. So another way of looking at this is there is an internal world and an external world. The internal world to me is exposing yourself to something a bit greater, and it's more like this awareness and love is the base. I'm really not going far with this, so I'm going to step into the exercise that I have here. So let's do a couple of exercises in the workshop. So each of these exercises are going to take about 5 minutes, and there's nothing really what I would call mystical or magical, so I'm going to step into something a little more practical here rather than something abstract. All right, so this is what I call an outward bound exercise. So what I want you to do is, behind my shoulder up here, pick a point up here in the corner. Just get a visual of that. And now close your eyes. Okay, bring your attention to the space behind your eyes and allow it to rest there. And don't analyze or judge anything. Just rest in that space. And through your closed eyes, allow your attention to slowly drift outward to
to the corner of the room that I pointed out. And just allow your attention to rest there as if it's a spotlight shining on an object. So slowly retroverse your attention from the corner of the room and bring your attention to your left ear and hear my voice and the sounds there. So you can feel your attention there in and around your ear. Now move your attention to the space behind your eyes and just rest in that space. Okay, go ahead and open your eyes. So what I really wanted to do there very simply was to take your awareness and point it outward. I wanted to show you that it can be directed in a certain location. And what I was trying to illustrate here was you can direct that into yourself, into the mind. So there's a very simple outward bound exercise. Now what I want to do is also show that you can bring this attention inward. So let's call this the inward bound exercise. Okay, close your eyes. Bring your attention from your head and slowly sink into your heart. So go down through your jaw, through your neck, and into your heart, in the area in and around your heart. Allow your attention to drop down to the rise and fall of your belly as you breathe in and out. So you may find yourself wanting to analyze what's happening, but just keep your attention below your neck without looking down from your head. And just really sink into your body and feel what's going on there. You might feel your bum sitting in a chair, the temperature of your skin, the joints in certain areas in your body, your heart beating, your belly rising and falling. Okay, go ahead and open your eyes. And very simply, what I was trying to illustrate is there's an inward bound way to take your attention. And again, I had it somewhat illustrated here, but there's a pointing outward of your attention, a pointing inward of your attention. And again, what I illustrated in the beginning, there's a benefit to this dichotomy of view and viewer. And that's really what I was trying to get to. The view is both external and what's happening internally. Thoughts, feelings in your body, emotions. So there's an internal world and an external world in which you can direct your attention. And they do feel like objects in your consciousness, objects in your awareness. So there's a corner of the room again, the feelings in your body. And they do seem like they're a separate thing. The observer, from this perspective of observer, witness, viewer. And the fundamental deep flaw I feel that we get lost in is we feel like we are the director of that awareness. That's us, that is the thing that is alive, that is directing. So we feel the observer is personal. We feel that's us because we're in control of the way we direct our attention, both internally and externally. So this third exercise I would call nowhere bound. Go ahead and close your eyes. And bring your attention from your head and slowly sink into your heart. So through your jaw, through your throat, down into your heart, and feel the area in your chest and around your heart. Now just allow your attention to move out to the space around you, 360 degrees around and even above and below you, and allow it to expand to the walls of this room. And try to keep your attention from going back into your head or giving too much attention to thoughts or judgments or any analysis. Just keep it below your neck. So even though this attention feels outside of you, you can allow it to rest there, and you can allow it to rest there. You can also feel your entire body at the same time. So allow your awareness to relax and become interested in objectless space. And notice the shift from awareness of space to noticing that space is aware. And allow awareness to be aware of itself as a contentless and formless field of awareness. And feel this field both outside and inside your body. Now relax and stop trying. Just allow your outside world and inside world to reach equilibrium. Just awareness being aware. Okay, go ahead and open your eyes. So all I was just trying to show there with that exercise was a very subtle shift into something more expansive, more real, both internally and externally. And that shift that I mentioned about watching yourself, watching your thoughts and emotions internally, to something more real, which is what's here, as a feeling of externalness, which is reality. And remember, this isn't about pushing away anything that comes into this space of attention. This is not about escape. The title of the talk was Absorbing Conflict, which was allowing stuff to arise. And as I was clumsily trying to express this in my own path, there can be an escape into this sense of awareness being void, awareness being emptiness, nothingness. But the process is with that depth, coming back down into the body and feeling stuff within yourself. So as your capacity for this exercise that I explained, external and internal, as that capacity gets enhanced, this becomes more of an ocean that can absorb the conflict that comes up within you. So I know a lot of people here have done a lot of introspection over the years, and they can see this about themselves. They can see
fears arise, and instead of pushing it away or escaping, allowing it to be there. That's the human quality of this path that a lot of people try to escape from. They're using their spiritual path to micromanage their life. And what I'm saying is get into this and experience the depth of yourself and allow it to be there. And the more you look at yourself, the more stuff arises that had previously been in your shadows. You start to grow up. You start to allow this stuff that you may have felt that was, for whatever reason, repressed as a child or just traumas as a child. They start to come back in this more expansive process, this more expansive ocean of awareness. Thus, the climbing of Jacob's ladder and then descending back down to me, I don't know if Richard Rose intended that, but that's how this is manifested in my life, in my search, which is what I was trying to describe very clumsily as coming back into the body. So this isn't about escaping into something, awareness is tossed around quite a bit, but nothingness. And people feel, I felt that that was the end of the search in a way. And in a way it is, because it does, and this is just my experience with it. It was a substantial loss of fear of death. When everything is stripped away, you feel that may be it. But the other half, the everythingness, so to speak, is coming back down into the body and going through life and experiencing this stuff that's been previously hidden in me, in my body internally. So I don't know if I'm doing a bit better with the expression of it. Are there any questions?
On your diagram, I understand with the external internal world that there's a body mind, awareness, love, and liberation, equilibrium. I'm not sure I get that.
Well, one way that would be interpreted, equilibrium, you have a sense as a seeker that there would be this feeling of being immune to the internal world or the external world. But what it may be a loose analogy as far as equilibrium would be like looking at a glass tube, which is a wind tunnel of stuff flowing by. But the equilibrium could be just stepping into that wind tunnel and moving with the objects at the same speed. So it's not necessarily static, completely still. And that's what I mean by experiencing life and allowing things to come up and not being so much attached to it when they do arise. There was a good session we had last night. There was somebody that mentioned fear of death. And what I was trying to describe, a difference might be absence of fear or freedom from fear. And if you look at that, there's a difference. Freedom from fear to me would be when it arises and you're not so much attached to that fear, but you let it there. And again, it's coming up in this deeper ocean of awareness and therefore less captivating. So I don't know if there's ever a point where somebody, God forbid actually, if you become a robot and don't have these human qualities in yourself and everything is taken away. But to me, it's the feeling of the fear and allowing it to be there and allowing it to pass through you. So that's equilibrium. I don't know if that is making sense. It's moving with the things that arise in you. Chris?
so there's some overlap with equanimity. I mean, there's an element of that, but it's not quite the same thing. You know, you could be acquiring this and still have some sort of resistance. I mean, I can't think of how that could be, but you're saying that it's not quite the same thing as equanimity, that there's a certain energetic aspect to equilibrium. There's something that separates it from equanimity.
Well, you mentioned the word resistance, and I tend to latch into that. Resistance to me would not be equilibrium, because you're pushing stuff away that is arising, and that is a trap. And maybe in some regards it's a safeguard. You know, we're only ready to see what we're supposed to see within us, particularly if there's traumas or whatnot in early life, that we're not supposed to unpack that so quickly and be overwhelmed by it. So there could, resistance might have a beneficial quality to it, but Larry.
Yeah, maybe I didn't get it, but it's...
No, it's probably my delivery.
it seemed to me that there were two things being confounded, and I think by asking a question that way, maybe you could clarify. It seemed to me that, in a way, you were talking about getting up there to absolute awareness and nothingness. And then you were talking about, you said this explicitly, coming back down. But what threw me off was your coming back down was not like Zen, mountains are again mountains and rivers are again rivers. Or, put it another way, that nothingness was also everything. But it seemed to me like you were moving in to the psychological realm when you were talking about shadow. And to me, that's kind of a separate, I mean, obviously nothing's totally separate, a separate line of development. It's a psychological line of development as opposed to a spiritual one. I mean, people can be up there at the top and still be basically a mass of shadow or vice versa.
Right.
And so I'm not sure exactly what you were emphasizing there. The two things seem to be confounded. Is it clear what I'm asking about?
Not quite, but maybe okay. maybe for those of you that don't know me that well, in 2007, just to go back to the history of the farm is an interesting bit of an interesting tale. There was a community building there, and a lot of people since the 70s put their heart and soul into that community building and spent a lot of time taking basically what was a hole in the ground to the brick and the mortar and making this beautiful place to have a gathering, which was Tat's previous center and Mr. Rose's vision of Tat. And when I put my heart and soul into that building as well, and one of the greatest gifts for me was sitting in that building. I was in a mini isolation retreat, and I had given up, basically had decided this was not something that ever was going to happen to me, you know, the quote big realization. So having that background, I basically thought, well, if I can't do anything for myself, I'll devote my life to helping others. And that was an expression through me, the labor in the community building itself. And I won't go into the story itself so much because it's not that important, and it tends to generate ideas in people as to what a realization should be. But I will say the world and Phil dropped away into where there was nothing remaining of Phil. And of course, you know, when that happens to an individual, that's a very shocking experience to lose everything you thought was real about yourself, to have everything stripped away to the very foundation. And that, to me, is an expression at the top of Jacob's Ladder. It's an experience of an absolute state. Now, the tricky part is what Larry is alluding to, and I've been very, one thing about my path is
for good or for bad, I just have been very open with all the doubts, and I write about it, and it's on the website. And it was a bit of a mystery to me as to why stuff just rushed back in. So Phil, there's a vacuum created, void, nothingness, however you want to express that. But then immediately after, doubts came back. Essentially, Phil came back quite a bit more demoted and humbled, but there he was. And so, you know, I think Larry's asking the question about coming back down off of that mountain. And it's been a slow process to me. What I would say is it's like a flower opening, which is a very compassionate way of losing my sense of self. I wouldn't want that state stripped away. As I said before, it would be a very robotic existence. But coming back down out, off the mountain is being exposed to stuff that comes up in me with that new perspective. So that's what I'm talking about with absorbing failure. There's a much more depth that you create in this path that when stuff does arise, shadow stuff, fears, just the flaws that are in all of us, we can each see it in ourselves. When that arises in that more, that newer perspective, it tends to, first of all, not take the intensity nor the duration of something that would have arisen in years before, would have consumed me and just have been a very difficult thing to deal with. And the other part of that, to me, is when people talked about feelings when I was a seeker, I had no idea what a feeling was. I could not grasp, because I was so much up here, that in that exposure and with time, this whole feeling is just has opened my heart and has just come through my body. And that's coming back down off the mountain, feeling what's inside. It's really hard to separate the mind from the body, as you're saying. But the mind to me is just so fluid, and, you know, define the mind. It would be very difficult to do that. But I could feel the mind here. I could feel it in my heart. I could feel it in my body, tensions and stuff that when it comes up, it's very palpable. And that's what I mean by coming down off the mountain and allowing yourself to be human. So there's a, what I would say in a lot of spiritual circles is a very much a disconnect with what they feel this path should be. And I feel it can be very dualistic when somebody steps back and says, I'm now in this bubble. That's what we think is going to happen in this path. That we're in this protective bubble and immune to all the stuff we don't like about ourselves. That's a trap. Yes?
I kind of just wanted to confirm whether I'm understanding you correctly.
Sure.
Because it's very new to me. So when you draw your attention, right, to a particular part of the body, as an example, you said to go into the center of the heart, and that's where your awareness is going. And then you also said, so what do you do with the thoughts that are arising and the emotions that are arising? Are you supposed to just ignore those, is that what you're saying, or follow those, or, you know, that's where I'm not sure if you understand, because the thoughts are still arising.
Right.
Maybe feelings are arising, emotions are arising. And so the awareness is just supposed to be aware of them. Is that what you're saying?
Well, people are wired vastly different. And I, for many years, when thoughts would arise, I would use what I would call the neti-neti approach, resistance to thoughts, turning away when they arose. Now, as my heart opened, it became more of a process of, instead of not this, not this, this too, this too. So what I would say to you is, if you
took my perspective as it is now, it would be to allow, not get lost in, but watch. Watch thoughts and stuff arise in yourself. So it's not, it's the vast part of humanity is, if you look the back at the diagram, the vast part of humanity is so laminated to that baseline, whatever it may be. Pain and pleasure is a very easy one to use, that they never conceive of stepping out of that world, that noise. And I'm pretty sure everybody in this room has had a bit of separation from that, because just what you're describing, you can see thought. You're not immersed in it. You know there's some truer aspect to yourself beyond thoughts and things that arise in you. So, you know, one thing could be to just see them as they arise and allow them to be there. Now, there's a word of caution with this approach. It could be construed as very passive or a resignation, and I'm not saying that. And by that I mean you could, if you say, if you accept this about yourself, this too, as you all know, they're very powerful draws, those being sex, drugs, very strong body compulsions. So if you were to just follow that and allow that to take you over and say, oh, this too, I'll go out and party and, you know, have sex with 10 different people, that's not what I'm advocating by this too or allowing. I'm just suggesting to see that in yourself and allow it. There's also in spiritual circles a tendency to feel that thoughts, because of what they heard or what they believe in, the thoughts are somehow contrary to your path. And there again, as I mentioned, if you were to resist thoughts, it's only going to reinforce them. So there's actually just a belief that thoughts are somehow not what you're supposed to have when you're being spiritual. And I'm saying, let those thoughts, watch them, and they will lose their own energy. Thorne.
Can you say a little more about awareness and love? And is it that the love is an expression of that, or is it one of the same?
I would say love is right here in the room. As awareness is as well, depends on how you look at it, but it is what's in the space of these walls. It is reality broadcasting constantly. And the love part to me is the acceptance of all the flaws of yourself. It's unconditional. It can't be any other way. We're basically whatever's happening is what's supposed to happen. You're getting what you're supposed to get all the time. So yes, I meant to use them in the same way depending on the viewpoint. And I think we're about out of time, right? So I want to apologize for the first part of that. I got derailed. And I don't know why.
We didn't
even
notice.
No, we didn't notice. If you want to tell us more about
it. Yeah. Honest to God.
Right out there, it got derailed.
From when I started to go.
Trying to explain this, right?
Yeah. I think it was. And I just sensed that I was not being really clear. And until I went through the exercises itself, I wasn't connecting with you. It was like, and I need to be able to connect, and I just wasn't feeling that. So, I don't know why, I just felt compelled to apologize because it wasn't coming across well, but I thank you for hanging in there. So.
Thank you.